from them, they're always eager to learn it. So what prompted me and actually pushed me to present just this small, to get this small presentation after Jumu'ah is due to a recording, and inshallah, and may Allah bless it and make it successful, it's, inshallah, it will be a monumental work. Even though it seems small, but inshallah, it will be a monumental work that I'm doing right now with a company, which is called the New Shahada CD. It's a badly needed, very badly needed CD. And I remember that when I accepted Islam, which will soon, in a few more months, will be 31 years ago, there are a lot of things that I learned that were incorrect. A lot of things. I would say maybe 65% of all of my Islam, when I came into Islam, was incorrect. It's either because of the books that weren't available that are available now, or it's because of the people who were around us didn't know themselves, or because there was no one around at all. And there's just a lot of things that we learned. And then also the things that are available today makes it much more easier. So what we decided to do is do a CD to help the person who had just accepted Islam. And when we were doing some of the recording the other night, a couple of nights ago, the producer of the CD and engineer of the CD, he came and he thanked me. He said, because he's been a Muslim quite a few years himself, and he said, I guarantee you, Dawood, that the average Muslim who's been a Muslim for years doesn't know this. So that's why I decided to just give some excerpts from some of these things that we're going to encourage the Muslims to memorize. So that once and for all, the Muslims will know what the new Shahadas know. The old head Muslims will know what the new Shahada knows. So with that, these are just some excerpts from that CD, inshallah. And this is the conditions of the Salah. And once again, this is not intended to embarrass anyone or put anyone on the spot or anything like this, because there's just a lot of things, a lot of basic things that we don't know. And when we were talking to Sheikh Ubaid al-Jabri, Habibullah, we were talking to Sheikh Ubaid al-Jabri, one of the major ulama of Ahl al-Sunnah today, we were asking him, you know, telling him that we are teachers, we are da'iyas, he already knows that we're du'at, and here in the West, he said, what should we teach? He said, you should go back to the basics. Go back to the basics. People are involved in a lot of things, a lot of areas that they shouldn't be involved in that are only for the ulama. He said, go back to your countries and teach the basic fundamental issues of Islam. Make sure that people memorize them. Make sure that people know them, understand them, and have the evidences for them. So that's what we're going to do, just a primer for this today. And what we want to do is, inshallah, is the shurut of the salah. The shurut of the salah and the sunan of the salah. The shurut of the salah and the sunan of salah. The word shurut, for those of you who are writing in Arabic, the word shurut is spelled sheen, ra, waw, ta. And it's the plural of sharut. Sharut. Sheen, ra, ta. Sharut. Shurut is the plural of sharut. And even before we do that, we need to write the word rukin. A rukin, which is spelled ra, kaf, noon. Ra, kaf, noon. And the plural of rukin is arkan, which is aleph, ra, kaf, aleph, noon. And in phonetics, you can write it any way you want. Arkan is the plural of Rukn. Rukn, once again, is Ra, Kaf, Noon. Rukn. And the plural of Rukn is Arkan. Aleph, Ra, Kaf, Aleph, Noon. We just mentioned in the khutbah that Islam has five Arkan, five pillars. And we also mentioned that Kufr has four Arkan, four pillars. A Rukn is that thing that is inside the actual thing itself. It's a part. It's a part of that particular thing that you're discussing. It's a part of that particular thing, and if it's left out, then the whole thing is null and void. The whole thing is null and void. The whole thing is null and void. It's no good. Invalid. A shart is that thing that's outside that particular thing that you're dealing with. And if it is not there, then that thing is null and void. So the Rukn is actually intrinsically a part of that thing, and the shart is something that's outside of that thing. Either way it goes, if a Rukn is missing, a pillar, or a shart is missing, which is a condition. Shart is condition. Shurud means condition. If a Rukn is omitted, the thing is invalid. If a shart is omitted, then it's invalid. Alright? So what we're going to talk about right now, inshallah, are the shurud of salah. The shurud are the conditions of salah. And the conditions of salah, the shurud of salah, are tis'a. There are nine. There are nine conditions of salah. Every Muslim should know this. Every Muslim should know this. There are nine conditions of salah. The first one is Islam. The first condition of salah is Islam. So when you write it, just leave a little space. Because they're nine of them. Leave a little space on your paper. Don't write them so close to each other. Because you may have to write something else, some details of what we mean by Islam. The second condition is Al-Aql. Al-Aql, which is, we can say safely, is the person has to be in their right mind. Sanity. They can't be insane. They have to have aql. The third condition is at-tamyiz. At-tamyiz. Tamyiz. At-tamyiz is being able to differentiate between this and that. Discernment. You know, to be able to distinguish between one thing and another. At-tamyiz. The fourth one is rafu' al-hadath. Rafu' al-hadath is the removal of hadath. Hadath is a type of impurity. Hadath is a type of impurity. The next one, which should be what? The fifth one? Izalatu al-najasa. Which is, izalatu najasa, is to also remove impurity. The next one, which should be what, six? Is it six? Satr al-awrah, covering the awrah. Covering the awrah. The next one is Dukhul al-Waqt, which is entering the time, the commencement of the time that the salah actually comes in. Dukhul al-Waqt. The next one is Istiqbal al-Qibla. Istiqbal al-Qibla, which is facing the Qibla. facing the Qibla. That's the eighth condition. And the ninth condition is an-niyya. It's an-niyya, which is intention. As for the first condition, the first shart of the shurut of salah, the first shart is al-islam. It is al-islam, meaning the first condition for the prayer to be valid, because a condition, if it's not there, then the thing is not valid. We said this in the beginning. The first condition for the salah to be valid is Islam. In other words, if a Greek Orthodox person makes the salah with you five times per day, it's not valid. If a Buddhist makes salah, it's not valid. Even if he does it with all the principles which we haven't given, all the pillars of the salah, even if he makes a perfect wudu, doesn't make a difference. Even if he has all the other eight conditions, if he has aql, if he has his right mind, if he has tamyiz, he has discernment, he can distinguish between this and that. If he removes the hadith, if he removes the najasa, all of these things, it doesn't make a difference. If he doesn't have Islam, his salah is not valid. Even if he has a good intention. So the person has to be a Muslim in order for the salah to be valid. As for the second condition, then it's aql. The person's aql. He has to have sanity. He has to be someone who is sane. Or he has to be someone who is not unconscious. He has to be either, number one, someone who has all of his mental faculties. He's not insane. Or he has to be someone who's not in a state of unconsciousness. The person who is mentally retarded is responsible for salah. The person who is mentally retarded is responsible for salah, dependent upon the level of their mental retardation. Because all mental retardation, they're not the same. There are people who are mentally retarded who get married to mentally retarded people. There are people who are mentally retarded that are married to non-retarded people. And they function. They go to work. They have children. They wash their own clothes. They cook their own food. So the level of retardation depends. But if the person has reached that level of retardation where it becomes an insanity, it becomes insanity, then that person, the salah is not valid on them. It's not valid. Likewise, when the person doesn't have consciousness, if the person doesn't have consciousness, then their aql has gone away from them at that particular time. They don't know what they're doing. The person who's in a coma, the salah is not responsible on them. They're not responsible for the salah. These are brief explanations of these conditions. The third one is the tamyiz. It's tamyiz, discernment. Being able to distinguish between this and that. This means that the person has reached an age that they know the difference between halal and haram. Good from evil. Those general issues of halal and haram. So the person who is 5 years old, they don't have a tamyiz. They don't have discretion and discernment. And they're able to distinguish between those things like an adult or a 10-year-old. That's why the Prophet ﷺ, he said, teach them the salah at 7 and beat them because of not praying it when they're 10. because this is from divine revelation. This is not from Dr. Phil or Oprah Winfrey. This is from the message of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, who received revelation. 10 years old is supposed to know. So they have to have discernment. You know? Discernment meaning they know the difference between this and that. And puberty is something else. When we say discernment, we don't mean balloon. Balloon is different from 10 years. Discernment is different from puberty. A person can reach the age of puberty and not have discernment. Don't confuse the two. A person can reach puberty and not have discernment. And since we mentioned puberty, we want to give you the four aspects of puberty, since we mentioned it. There are four aspects to puberty. And there's some difference of opinion, but these which we're presenting right now are the strongest of the opinions. Number one, or before we say number one, the four aspects of puberty, or four conditions, for lack of better words, three of them pertain to male and female, and one of them pertains only to the female. Just remember that. Puberty has four aspects. Three of them pertain to the male and the female, and four of them pertain to the female. One of them is exclusively for the female, but she is involved in all four. Males are only involved in three of these aspects of puberty. That's number one. Number two, if the person is affected by any one of those four, they have reached puberty. Any one of those four. It doesn't have to be all four together, or three of them together for the males, as we mentioned. All right? So the first one, for the person to be considered in the state of puberty according to Islam, not according to the doctors of the medical field or the biologists or people who deal with them, the anatomy of people. We're talking about Islamically, the Islamic definition of puberty. Number one is the emission from the private parts, of course, the front, of seminal fluid. In other words, wet dreams. If that boy or that girl has wet dreams, then they are in a state of bulugh. Bulugh. Not balugh. Bulugh. Puberty. That boy is baligh, and the girl is baligha. Bulugh, puberty. So, if they have seminal emission, if they have wet dreams, they wake up in the middle of the night, usually the girls go to the mother, the boys will probably go to the father, they may even go to their mother, Allah knows best, because that's the way Allah created the women, mashallah. They may say, you know, Abby, or Ummi, something happened. And they explain it to them, right? And then you're going to look at your son and you're going to say, you pat him on the head, you're mad. He's going to like that too. He's going to like that. And you pat him on the head and say, you're a man now. He's going to start flexing his little skinny muscles and stuff, you know. So that's the first one. The second one, for when the person becomes balanced and they have the rule in puberty, is that they're going to have hairs coming not on the face, that's not one of the signs of puberty, coming from the private parts or under the arms. Some people think, and even people in the medical field, they say if the hair goes on the face, that means they have reached puberty. Not in Islam. Not in Islam, not necessarily. The ulama say it's the hair on the private parts and under the armpits. And not separately, together. Not saying that it can't be one, but we're saying that it's not either, it can be either or, but they're put together. But it's early enough, when they mention it, they mention them together. That's what we're saying. They mention them together. Then it's under the arms, the armpits, and the private parts. If they have hair there, then they have reached the state of bulugh. Bulugh. Ba, lam, waw, ghain. Bulugh. Number three, they reach the ages between 14 and 16. Between 14 and 16. The ulama, they differ on this, these age groups. Shaykh al-Uthaymeen, rahimahullah, Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, I heard him say between 14 and 16. Between 14 and 16. And this is not to disregard any of the other ulama who say between 13 and 16. So if someone wants to say between 13 and 16, it's no problem. Or 13 and 15. But I don't think anyone starts with 12. I think it starts with 13. If those who differ, I think it begins with 13. But Allah knows best. But for now, we're going to say between 14 and 16. If the person doesn't have any seminal emission, no wet dreams, and if the person doesn't have any pubic hair whatsoever on the private parts, on the underarms, and they reach 14, they are considered in the state of bulugh. They consider the state of puberty according to the Sharia. And the fourth and final aspect of puberty only pertains to the females. All three of them pertain to the females and the males. The fourth one is only for the females. With the other three, of course. And that, of course, is menses. When the girl has menses, she is in a state of puberty. Not like what the kuffar said. If you notice, we haven't said that she has protruding breasts. The kuffar adds to that breast. No. Menses. When she has a menses, she is legally a woman. Doesn't mean she has discernment. Is the difference? It doesn't mean she has discernment that she has this condition of temyiz. Because bulugh is different from temyiz. It means that she legally is responsible for praying and fasting. She's legally responsible to being covered, even if she doesn't have anything to cover. And there was an article in the Time magazine about maybe three years ago, which talked about the phenomena, the serious phenomena in the United States of early puberty, according to the American, the Western standards, the Western medical standards of puberty, the non-Islamic standards of puberty. There was an article about early puberty. They have some as early as 7. Girls becoming in the state of puberty at 7 years of age. Some of them 8 and 9 with full breast and menses. And then they were talking about in this article, which was quite a lengthy article. And you can find it on the internet from the Time magazine, inshallah. They were talking about the different theories why there was early puberty, which we don't need to go into, inshallah. Some talk about the meat, some talk about the hormones, the milk, you know, etc. Okay, so the next condition of salah, to make the salah valid, is rafa'u al-hadath, lifting or taking away hadath. Al-hadath is a type of impurity. And the easiest way to know the difference between hadath and najasa, or what they call hadath and khabath. Hadath is that type of impurity. The easiest way to understand it is that type of impurity that comes from inside of you out. It comes from the inside out. It's the one that comes from the two holes. That's what we'll say. It's the one that comes from the two holes. Al-qubul wa dubur. That's what the ulama say. Al-qubul wa dubur. From the front and from the back. The hole in the front and the hole in the back. Anything comes out of impurity from the front or the back, and there are some things that come out from the front is not considered hadith. But that's the details. We're not talking about the details right now. We just want to know and learn the conditions for the salah and a summary, a brief explanation, a summarized explanation of each one. We're not going into the detailed issues of the 50 issues of it. We'd be here for a month. Well, not that long, but we'd be here for a long time. So, removal of hadith, or lifting the hadith, taking away the hadith is that thing that comes from al-fubul wa-zuhr. The zuhr is the anus, the fubul is the penis in the vagina. It's legal for us to say that. It's permissible for us to say this. In Arabic, it sounds better, but when we hear it in English, it says, you know, when you say these words in English, people get a little kind of twinge and start saying, oh, the brother, he said that my child, and put my hands over my child's ears and the back of the sisters, you know. Alright, so that's the removal of hadith. That's a condition. If the hadith is not removed, salat is invalid. Invalid. Batila. Invalid. Null and void. The next one is izalatun najasa. Izalatun najasa. Najasa, the removal of najasa, najasa is that thing that is on the outside of you. It's not coming from inside of you. The thing, the hadith, is the thing like urine comes from you. And the feces when you defecate. And by the way, even though this is not an English class, but since I'm an English teacher, at least I was an English teacher for a year, we have a habit in America saying a person's defecation. The word is not defecation, it's feces or stool. The defecation is the actual thing. You're defecating, that's the act. So it's not defecation in the strict sense of the word. It can be used, but the actual word is stool or feces or something like this. So the thing that comes from the front, the thing that comes from the back, that's hadith. But if it's on the outside of you, not coming from you, that's najasa. And it could be urine, and it could be feces. From you, a human being, or an animal. That's what's considered najasa. That's the big difference between najasa and hadith. Hadith is coming from inside of you. Urine, feces, etc. But the najasa is a thing that's on the outside of you. It didn't come from you. It's something that comes from you, but it didn't come from you. Alright? And if it's on your clothes, it's considered najasa. Najasa. If it's on the place where you're going to pray, it's considered najasa. Any impurity that's on your clothes or the place you're going to pray is called a najasa. You have to remove that. If that's not removed, you don't have, the salat is invalid. The next one is satr al-awra. Satr al-awra. It is the covering of the awra. The covering of the awra. Satr means to cover. This thing right here I'm holding in my hand right now is called in the Arabic language sitar. Sitar, a curtain. They call it sitar, a curtain, because it covers the window. So satr comes from the word sitar, or sitar comes from the word satr. Satr al-awra means to cover the awra. The awra, as we mentioned yesterday, in Islam, we have the ulama of Islam. They teach us that a word has a linguistic meaning and a religious meaning. A linguistic meaning and a religious meaning. A literal dictionary meaning and a technical religious meaning. The literal meaning of awra, the literal meaning of awra means anything that's shy or ashamed to be exposed. Anything that's shy or ashamed of being exposed. Anything. That's the literal meaning, not the religious meaning. Anything that's shy or ashamed of being exposed. Alright? Now, when you go to the religious meaning, Because the ulama, like Sheikh al-Albani, we heard him say that when a person knows the ulama of Islam, he says the ulama, he's an Arab, but he says the ulama of Islam, they say when you know the linguistic meaning of a word, it gives you more benefit when you get to the religious meaning. Things open up now, but you know the root meaning of it. So the word awra linguistically, it means the thing that's shy. It's ashamed to being exposed. It intrinsically likes to be covered. So now when you go now to the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, and look at the hadith that he said, the Prophet ﷺ's statement. Al-mar'atu awra. The woman is an awra. What does that tell you? That means the real nature of a woman is that she doesn't want to be seen. That's why when the Prophet asked Fatima, his daughter, radiallahu ta'ala anha, he said, what's the best thing for a woman? She said that she doesn't see men and she's not seen by men. She's not seen by men, nor do men see her. Because a woman is an awra. Alright? So, the next condition of salah is satrul awra, covering that thing that has to be covered for the salah to be valid. For the woman, for salah to be valid, even if she's in her house and there's nobody around, the awra for the woman, even if she's in the comfort of her home, in the back room, in a closet, in the back room, nobody's around. The awra for the woman is, everything has to be covered for her to meet that salah, to be valid. Everything has to be covered except her hands and her face. Her feet have to be covered. Her feet have to be covered. Her feet have to be covered. Even if she's in her house, even if she's in the privacy of her home, no men around, no women around, nobody around, just her. Her feet have to be covered. And what do we mean by her feet have to be covered? That everything has to be covered, including her feet. It means she has to have on either a pair of socks that cover her entire feet, or she has to have on a dress that's so long that her feet are never exposed in every position of the salah. Qiyam, ruku', sujood, jalsa, etc. So, therefore, it's better for her to put on socks and something long, just to make sure. Everything has to be covered except her hands and her face. Her forearms, if she makes a movement in the salah and her sleeves come up and expose her forearm, her salah is batila. Void. Everything has to be covered. This is the condition of salah. Satrul awra. The awra has to be covered. Even if she's in her house. But she's in front of Allah. We're not worried about the men right now. She's in front of Allah. Allah wants us to be covered, and everything of our aura has to be covered. Alright? As for the men, we know that that which is between the navel and the knee is the aura, in general. But for the salah, it's more than that. The man has to have a covering that's on his body, that covers his aura, and his shoulders. He cannot pray in a tank top shirt. He cannot pray in his ihram when he's at the Kaaba or Muzdalifah or in Muna, commonly called Mina, correct pronunciation Muna. He cannot pray with his ihram on with his shoulder exposed at the Kaaba. Because the only time he's going to have his shoulder exposed is when he's at the Kaaba. He's not going to have his shoulders exposed like you see so many of the pilgrims doing. They walk around with their shoulders exposed through the whole Hajj or Umrah. No, this is only when you arrive and you go around the Kaaba for the first time. So he can't have that shoulder exposed. He can't pray in a tank top shirt. He has to have something over his shoulders. Because the Prophet ﷺ said in the Hadith of Bukhari in Kitab al-Salah, in the book of Salah, لا يصلين أحدكم في الثوب الواحد وليس على عاتقيه شيء، وفي رواية وليس على عاتقه شيء. Let none of you pray in one thobe with nothing covering his two shoulders, and the other narration, his one shoulder. He has to have something over his shoulders. If he doesn't have something over his shoulders during the salah, he can come outside with a tank top on, but he can't pray like that. If he doesn't have something over his shoulders, because that's his awrah in the salah only, then his salah is batila, is void. So satr al-awrah is a condition of the salah. If the person is leading the salah as the imam, or he's a ma'moom, the ma'moom is the person being led in salah. Ma'moom is the person being led in salah. The person who's munfarid is the person who's praying by himself. He's leading himself, he's praying by himself. If he's the imam, or he's the ma'moom, or he is the munfarid, all three categories, in his shirt, comes out of his pants, and exposes the top part, as we call the crack, of his buttocks, finished. Salah is void. He has to pray again. Get him to cover himself. You see this a lot. This happens a lot. Or his pants. His shirt covers, but his pants shows the size, the dimensions of his private parts. Finished. Because his aura is not covered. It's finished. He has to go find something to put it on and pray again. Can't pray like that. Alright? The next condition for salah is dukhul waqt, the entering of the time of the prayer. Salah will not be valid if you pray it before the time comes in. It won't be valid. Even if you didn't know. You made a mistake. Doesn't count. It's invalid. But Shaykh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, rahimahullah ta'ala, who Shaykh Muhammad al-Banna, who lives in Jeddah, commonly called Jeddah, but the correct pronunciation is Jeddah. It's Jeddah. Well, the common people call it Jeddah, but it's Jeddah. Shaykh Muhammad al-Banna, who's about 100 years old now, maybe 99 or 100 or 101, something like that. He lives in Jeddah. He says that Shaykh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen is the Imam al-Shafi'i of our time. He's the Imam al-Shafi'i of our time. The Imam al-Shafi'i of our time, Shaykh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, Habibullah ta'ala, he says that if the person prays before the time comes in, for instance, somebody asked me a question, Shaykh, I prayed the Asr before the time came in. I thought the time came in, Shaykh. I couldn't hear the Adhan. Because believe it or not, in Saudi Arabia, there are some places where you can't hear the Adhan. It's rare, but there are some places where you can't hear the Adhan. There are some places where you hear the Adhan, you can't hear the Adhan because there's so many Adhans, you can't even tell, you can't even recite, repeat after them, whatever. There's just so many Adhans. Allah, 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 there's just so many. And there's some places where it's rare, but there's some places where you can't hear the Adhan at all. And then there's other places where you're in your house and the master is right next door, you can't hear it. Because the air conditioning is so hot and the air conditioning is so loud that you can't hear the Adhan. The way the speakers are situated. Anyway, the person said, I thought that the salah was in. It was a place where I couldn't hear the event. And I prayed the salah to Asr. And I found it later on, I saw the people coming to the masjid, that it was, the time was before that. He said the salah is void. Fatila. But you'll get credit for it as a nafila. As an optional prayer. You'll get credit for that salah that you thought was fatila. As a nafila prayer, now you have to pray again. You have to pray again. You can't pray before the time of the salah. The salah is prescribed on the believers at a prescribed time. It is enjoined on the believers at a prescribed time. So dukhul waqt, you have to have the correct time of the salah. The next one is istiqbal al-qibla, that's number 8. Facing the qibla. You have to face the qibla. If you don't face the qibla, your salah is void. It's very important to know the direction of the qibla. Very, very important. And that depends on where you are in the world. It depends on where you are. There's a misconception among the kuffar. They always say this in the news and the media. The Muslims face the east when they make prayer. That's not true. The Muslims don't face the east. The Muslims face Mecca. The Qibla is Mecca, not the east. When I was in Australia, the times that I was there, one time, I made the Salat al-Maghrib. It was an ajeeb, strange. It tripped me, bugged me out. I'm facing the direction where the sun was setting. That was the Qibla. It was Maghrib. I could see the sun had set. While I'm standing there making the Salat in front of the window, the west, the direction of the Qibla was west. This was in Melbourne, Australia. The place where the sun set was the Qibla. The complete opposite of us in America. Northwest. Or northeast, pardon me. Northeast. Here it was southwest or something like that. So the person has to face the Qibla for the obligatory prayer to be valid. For the obligatory prayer to be valid. And the last thing, of course, the ninth condition of Salah is a niyyah. The person has to have a niyyah, and the niyyah is not something that's done by the tongue. It's done in the heart. There is no verbal intention for anything in Islam. Even though people may tell you there's a verbal intention for Hajj, for Umrah, that's not true. That's not true. The verbal intention is a bid'ah, innovation. Intention is in the heart. محلها القلب. The place for the intention is in the heart. You have to have an intention. You don't say it with your tongue. Oh Allah, I intend to follow this imam at this Dawah center in Wichita, Kansas, on such and such street at 6:35 p.m. behind the imam with a white towel on and a black kufi. It's 4 rakahs, so that's al-Abba. You know, you can just stretch out and say, son, are you really on a roll? You know, say with the tongue. No, it's just in your heart. These are the conditions of the salah. Close your books, brothers. Close the books. Close your notebooks. Turn them upside down. Close them. Close them. Close them all up, brothers. Close them. Come on, quickly, quickly. We finish it here. Now, close up. Close them up. Close them up. Close them up. Who here right now can give me all 9 in order? Al-Islam, number 1. Al-Aql. You can give them English or Arabic. Don't cheat. I see somebody here, Ibrahim. You're not looking at the book, are you, man? I'm watching you, man. I'm watching you. Put this eye on Omar, this eye on you. Like this. And he's right. You can do it in English or Arabic. So he got 3 so far. Islam, the person has to be a Muslim. What? Al-Aql? It has to be sane, it's tamyiz, discernment. What's the next one? Removal of hadith and purity, that's number 4. He's on a roll, man. Najasa, number 5. You want to pass? But you can't. He did good. Can anybody finish it? Covering the aura. Huh? We can say basically it's not an aura, but there's one after that. Is there one after that? Huh? Dukhul waqt. Entering the time. What's the next one after that?
Is this in the end?
No, that's the last one. That's number nine. What's the eighth one? The Qibla. Facing the Qibla. It's not difficult. It's not difficult at all. When you do it like this, who can do it again? The first one? Everybody. And it's not. First, let's get Muslim. Number two. Here's what he's saying. Aqam. Number three. Discernment. Tamiz. Discernment. Right? Number four. Removal of the hadith. Yes. Removal of the hadith. Number five. Yes. Removing the nishasa. Number six. Discovering the hour. Number seven. The entering of the time. Commencement of the time. Number eight. Facing the qibla. Number nine. The niyyah. Those are the conditions of salah. تعالى وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم. And when we said this, when we were recording the other night, he said, Dawood, if this, when the new Shahada gets this CD, the imams in America will have a hard time. He said, because I guarantee you the average imam doesn't know this. He said, so that new Shahada is going to say, Salaam Alaikum. Imam, wait a minute. You know, you're going to be correcting the imam. Wait a minute. Do you know the conditions of Salah? That's not a lot. We've got the sister says, you mentioned facing the qibla is a condition of the obligatory salah. Does this mean that it's not a condition of the nafil salah? Yes, you have to face the qibla for all prayers. But if you're not facing the qibla for the non-obligatory prayers, the salah won't be invalid. It won't be invalid.